ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. Josh Sternberg is a journalist covering media, tech, and business. Most recently, he was the media and tech editor at Adweek. He's currently editor at The Media Nut, a newsletter for all legs of the media industry stool, brands, publishers, agency, and ad tech. Each day, he dives into one topic, offering a mix of reporting and analysis to provide an honest look into the industry. Add it to your subscription list. It's well-written, essential reading. Josh, thank you so much for joining us today.
No, thank you for having me.
I'm so glad to have you back and ready to talk about one of my favorite topics, which is, does digital advertising work? And as a side note to listeners, Josh had a newsletter on this topic and it's full of great links. So go back and find it and read it. Anyway, what I think triggered that newsletter and may have been the review of Tim Hoang's book in Wired. And I'm so glad you wrote what you did, because I think a lot of things are often conflated when we talk about digital advertising, and it's important to tease out what's what and what it means. So first, when we say digital advertising, what is encompassed by that?
That is the $535 billion question.
Right. For purposes of this conversation.
But it's important though, because is it search?
Right.
Is it display? Is it sponsored content? Is it digital sponsorships? Is it what was the name of that company used to do like the they had the green font over words? Oh, it began with a V. I'm drawing a blank on it now. But it was like, Business Insider and AOL used to use it a lot back in the day. The point is that digital advertising has multiple levers. And when we talk about does it work, we often forget that we don't really actually know what the it is, right? Which is why, I answer your question with a question, right? Of like, which are we talking about here? To your point about conflating multiple conversations here, it's such a hard question to answer, because oftentimes, you have the phrase, these companies are grading their own homework.
Right.
And that's usually levied at the walled gardens of Facebook and Google, which command, 87 cents of every digital dollar spent or something like that. I think that's really like when we use shorthand of does online advertising work, the immediate response is to go to Facebook and Google, but there's a whole world out there of digital ads.
Right. So Facebook, and let's just, for purposes of our conversation today, when we say Facebook, let's say it's Facebook, Instagram, the Facebook properties.
Yes. Yes.
Amazon, because they do a tremendous amount of advertising within their, people who are already looking to buy something.
Yep.
Google, we're talking about search. We're also talking about all of their participation in programmatic. So I think we almost have to separate those, when they're actually doing programmatic versus sort of search.
And it's even beyond that, right? So yeah, you've got your search ads, but I don't know, do you have a Gmail account? You ever notice all the ads that are in your Gmail account? Where do those come from? So like each of these companies is, has various ways of advertising. And that's where I kind of get into the, you mentioned the Wired piece where, they're reviewing the Google employee's book who says that micro-targeting is, is bunk. And
yeah, I'm not totally on I think there's a portion of his argument which is valid, but I think a lot of it, at least as far as the review went, was a mishmash of stuff.
Agreed. I mean, it works. And again, it goes back to your question of like, it depends on how you define it, right? Like, you've got two different segments that we talk about when we ask this question is, does the end part of the advertising chain get you to do what the advertiser wants?
Right? So the KPI, do we achieve the KPI?
Right. Did you click through? Did you buy something? Did you engage or share, whatever metric you're using?
Right.
And then the other question that I think is alongside of that is the mechanism, is the delivery tool functional? And the former question, that's where things can kind of get tricky, right? We have banner blindness. We don't see banner ads or display ads. Click-through rates are 0.1%. So, you know, they don't work in that regard. But being able to deliver your message to tens of thousands of websites in a fraction of a second through the click of a button through a programmatic channel, excuse me, indicates that the ability to get your message out will have an impact on people over time. Now, there's another layer to peel back, and I was actually having a conversation with someone about this earlier today. When you look at the digital advertising landscape, you know, one of the default criticisms to come, which is 100% true, is all of the fraud that happens there. And when you try to equate that to TV, you know, there's not as much fraud on TV because if I'm Johnson & Johnson and I spend $150 million on NBC for the upfront, I know that my 30-second commercial is going to run where I bought that time. Whereas if I spend money through a digital platform, I have no idea where that ad's going to end up. And we also know that TV advertising works because it has the sight sound motion that gets to the core of your brand. It's a brand awareness tool. Mm-hmm. Whereas digital has been direct response,
right?
Generally, right?
Right.
Now, you know, we talk about Facebook, and Facebook is heavily into DR, and you know, they make moves in brand awareness and other other avenues through their pages and whatnot and engagement. But look at Instagram, where
Instagram is such a huge shoppable. I mean, it is becoming the shopping. It's so powerful that you have influencers whose messages, you know, they're these social contagions, and their messages are received very well by people who are looking to identity signal that they too are part of this group. And I think that that's one of the things when we talk about efficacy, that's where, again, where are we talking about the efficacy starts to become really important, because if we're talking about digital publishers, programmatic sort of display ads where it's, you know, if I go to Wired magazine site, you know, what am I seeing? What am I being served up? Versus if I'm on my social platform, looking at the people I want to look at in my feed, or having things suggested to me that are coordinated with things I've already selected, that's a very different thing. Or even to your point about the Google ads showing up in your Gmail, you know, that's a very different and far more sophisticated matching going on.
And with Instagram, it works.
Oh yeah.
Right?
And that's
kind of like where I'm reading this review and I'm thinking, but Instagram micro-targeting advertising works. It works at a brand awareness level because you're getting the sight, sound, and motion of an Instagram story or of something that comes into your feed. also works as a direct response mechanism, is I can shop from directly from the app.
And it's frictionless. And it is made for COVID land. It is, yeah, that was one of the things that the reviewer, and I have not read the book, and so I should be fair, I should really read the book. But the reviewer was sliding between all of these things, and I was like, whoa, I don't know.
Agreed. Yeah, and that's kind of where the idea of conflation happens, and of these different ideas, but also just having a more realistic understanding of how the technology, as well as the philosophy of advertising, works. And I think too often we default to the tech and forget about the purpose of the ad. And for a lot of these companies, like the ad, like what is the purpose of the ads, and then what is the mechanism that we can deliver those ads to? They all have some kind of KPI attached to them, and if they don't hit those KPIs, we wouldn't see them. So, like, I find
that's one of the things. One of the theses is that people don't understand what they're buying or how it works. But don't people get, you know, postmortems and whether or not they succeeded on the KPIs?
Right, no? And they do. And sometimes the KPIs are off, and sometimes the KPIs are good, right? And you can tell, look, if you talk to a media buyer and you ask them, what is the consideration set for your client? You know, they'll tell you, we want the audience that falls into this psychographic or demographic or whatever. But when all is said and done, the client has a goal. And if the client doesn't hit that goal, then they point the finger often at the agency.
Yeah, they do.
Right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think that because we are in a moment where takes are fine, we need takes, we need thoughts, we need to have these conversations, but we also tend to kind of not really pay attention to the reality that's in front of our noses, right? Like,
well, yeah, and it's almost like we need to define the language too. I mean, because to say, oh, these people don't understand what they're doing, and then to create a soup of terms, well, does the writer understand what he's talking about? I mean, you know, you have to say in this bucket, you know, okay, we're talking programmatic display type advertising, and whether or not you're achieving KPIs, it could be whether or not you're achieving those KPIs, it could be that there's a lot of shrinkage, wastage going on, but that's just the cost of doing business.
Right, and there absolutely is waste, and there is absolutely fraud, and the technology was created so that it could be, so that media buying could be more efficient. And in that regard, it kind of is, right? Like, you've got these programmatic channels that allow buyers to spend across websites in fractions of a second.
Right.
And that has consequences to it. But when you consider the giant pool that we're talking about like a rounding error of a rounding error here.
Right.
And again, and this might be naive, it might be simplistic, you know, I am definitely both. If it didn't work in a way that allowed companies to make money, they wouldn't do it. Right?
You have to be careful with that kind of logic chain, though, because that's almost like a correlation without a real causality. You know, I mean, it's they're spending the money because they believe in it, but they may be wrong. Is I guess that's the sort of thesis, is they're spending the money and they are wrong. And when they figure out they're wrong, they're going to stop spending the money and the whole thing is going to fall apart.
And that is possible, right? But again, this goes back to that broader question of what we're talking about.
Right.
Online advertising. If Procter & Gamble spends $9 billion a year in advertising. Now, I don't know what the breakdown is, but let's say $1 billion of that is for digital platforms. If they didn't generate what they would consider to be a positive forwarding like way of quantifying how much they can get out of that, do you think that they would be spending as much money on these tools?
Well, I think this is one of the challenges, is attribution has always been tricky, right? And
yes,
that, you know, metrics and data came later to marketing, right, than other parts of the business. And so now you have people really needing to be able to draw that line. And, you know, you have, to your point earlier, and even our previous conversation, is, are they even using the right KPI? You know, yeah, they may have achieved that, but did it make their end goal happen? You know, so their ability to define the KPI properly, creatively achieve the KPI, have the technology power it, and do this within an acceptable price point, I guess, becomes the question. And you referenced, I believe it was you who said, you know, you bought the sneakers, and then you get the ads for the sneakers. I had that with a vacuum. It's like, I already bought the vacuum, so right, why am I still getting the ads for the vacuum? So that's a tech failure, you know.
Yes.
But it does it, but it's almost like the early days of the internet or early animation, where you could see where it was going. It wasn't there yet, but if it knows I bought a vacuum, so here you are, here are more choices. You know, buyer's remorse, do you want something different? But eventually it's going to be listening to me talking about the house being a mess, and it's going to serve up a vacuum cleaner when I'm thinking about it. Or your shoes, they're going to connect with your Fitbit, know how much you've been walking or running, and say, oh, it's probably due for some new shoes. And they're going to serve up an ad suggesting you make a purchase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where it's trending. I think that's where it's trending. And this is why surveillance capitalism, why these walled gardens are so nerve-wracking. This is why the Russian interference in the election was possible. This is why QAnon has, you know, blossomed, right? You know, you have ludicrous conspiracy theories because it actually works. It's just that somehow the brands aren't, well, I guess the brands are working well on Facebook, but maybe it's not working as well out on the programmatic side.
Yeah. And again, like there's so much, right? Like, it's not that there's like no nut to crack, but at the same time, I think that this industry is so unnecessarily complex.
Well, the Loom Escape, that thing.
Oh, my goodness.
Which, well, first of all, obviously we don't have visual aids because it's a podcast, but just in case people aren't aware what it is, could you describe what it is and give sort of a description of the visual?
Yeah, so the Loomscape was a slide created by Terry Kawaja, who's an investment banker in media many years ago at this point, where he showed on the left side of the page the marketer and on the right side of the page the publisher, and all of the ad tech components that sat in between the buyer and the seller. And as the years have moved on, the gulf between the marketer and the publisher has become an ocean. And that ocean is filled with shit.
And sorry. It is.
But it really is. Because you've got all of these companies that are trying, they all do the same thing and they all say the same thing. And a lot of it,
and they all claim they're unique.
That's right. And revolutionary also, don't forget about that one. But they all, you know, it all boils down to, you know, we can help marketers get their message out to the right person with the right message at the right time in front of the right audience. And, you know, the publishers are kind of caught, right? They don't like all of these, a lot of these ad tech companies allow the publishers to make incremental revenue because the dominant forces of revenue of, you know, the handshake and the media buy have, you know, dissipated like a fart in the wind.
Right.
And the complexity of the companies is less on the actual software and engineering. Like that stuff works. It makes right. total sense. It's just that there's so much of it. How many different companies are doing the same thing, muddying up the waters, and then, you know, it really becomes a race to the bottom.
Well, I guess question, if we think about competition and shouldn't it make for a more efficient market, right? That for as far as the publisher and the marketer are concerned, that because there are so many different choices, that pricing should be competitive and that they shouldn't be losing so much. It doesn't seem to work that way. What's strange is it is when you go to these walled gardens where you're kind of held up because they control everything, including their metrics, but at least it really seems to deliver on what they say it does. But of course they're measuring their own metrics. So, you know,
right. And that's a point that, you know, Dr. Augustine Fell makes is that the fraud and the malfeasance that happens actually happens off of Facebook and off of Google when marketers are getting away from those particular companies' audience networks. And
right.
that's where a lot of the, you know, I mean, that is one of the driving forces for Google to choke off the, you know, third party cookie.
Right.
The industry will always have to clean itself up, right? There are tons and tons and tons of bad actors, and it's going to take a whole entire industry to be able to combat that. And oftentimes the bad actors find themselves in, if not direct seats of power, being able to influence, whether through how they navigate trade bodies or relationships they have with other bad actors. Like it's going to come down to, at some point, the marketer, because they're the ones that control the money,
right,
that says, hold on a second. Like this is not.
Well,
right.
But if they're not objecting right now, I mean, the fraud is astronomical. You also have ad blocking going on. And so how much mm-hmm. is just never being seen. So if they're not currently saying, you know, let's have a come to Jesus meeting and figure this stuff out, then mm-hmm. then what will it take? Like, how much more fraud will it take? What is, you know, obviously, to our previous discussion, the targeting is fixable. The identification of who you want to get the message and when, that's getting there closer and closer. So it really, it almost comes down to the fraud piece, right?
Yeah. And that, I mean, look, if I knew the answer to that question, you and I would not be having this conversation right now. Because
you would be one of the few people getting VC money right now. Yes.
I would be sitting somewhere in the south of France, sipping my nice wine. I have no idea. I really don't. It will take the big boys, the big spenders, to influence others. So P&G, Unilever, Verizon, AT&T, they can, you know, hold their breath until their mouths are blue, saying, you know, we're not going to spend on YouTube until YouTube cleans itself up. And then, you know, they wind up spending anyhow, right? Like it has to move beyond just talk and getting things done. But again, like I really have no idea how, outside of government intervention,
Well, okay, it's interesting. Government intervention, rumors abound about, you know, what happens after the next election. Let's say it's a Democratic sweep. Let's say regulation and breaking up of Amazon and Facebook, that they're too big, they are too powerful, they're crushing innovation. Does that then help the situation or make it worse?
I will punt and say yes.
No, come on. It's all hypothetical.
I know, like in a
presidential debate, you're like not answering my question.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's like hypotheticals are tricky, right? Right. Like on paper, it would make sense that you have a Democratic controlled House and Senate and president who can work together to be able to pass significant regulation and reform. But reality is that, yes, you may have a democratically held Senate, House, and President. But that also means that you have a very vocal minority in the Republicans who have spent the last however many years building an infrastructure for this very scenario through lobbying and whatnot. And anyway, look, we're already in a minority ruled country. So what does, you know, what would it even matter if you've got Democrats in the majority in all the houses and the presidency? I don't know. I really don't know. Like I said, on paper, it sounds like that would work in normal times, but I think we all recognize that we are not in normal times and won't be in normal times for quite some time.
Right. Right. So backing up, because we're almost at the end of our conversation, but we have a $325 billion business that's on track to grow to $525 billion. And so that seems like people are putting their faith there. And this is the programmatic, non-Facebook advertising model. Do we land that it's the old adage, I know that 50% of my advertising doesn't work. The problem is I don't know which half. Is that it's sort of that it's an acceptable, that this is simply the price of doing business and it's expensive, but it's achieving ultimately the ends and this is just the price of it? Do you think that's where we shake out?
Yeah, I don't. Again, I don't know. The advertising universe is so big, right? And, you know, look at Facebook, just one company. They have 8 million advertisers. How on earth are we supposed to come to a conclusion of what this is going to look like when a company has 8 million advertisers? So you take out your top 100 spenders. It doesn't make a dent because you have almost 7,999,900 other advertisers. If each of those companies spend $100 a month, which is nothing, this company is still making billions of dollars a year. So who knows?
Well, and I think what's interesting there is that those smaller spenders, it may seem, you know, it's small potatoes compared to P&G, but those dollars are very significant for those smaller businesses. And they really, as far as their use on, let's say, Facebook or Instagram, they really, if they don't get what they want out of it, they aren't going to spend the money.
And that's exactly right. And that is how you know that the shit works.
Well, certainly the behavioral stuff in the walled gardens works. Certainly this stuff, if you're on Amazon and you're looking to buy something, you're already a very soft target there, right? To get. And where it gets tricky is the poor publishers who are picking up table scraps already.
Yes.
And so it's almost like the publishers who have already been made anorexic because they don't get the ad dollars, really do need to look at these other revenue streams or other types of advertising. To your earlier, your very first point about branded content, sponsored content, you know, what do we consider that in this universe? And those things are still done with a handshake.
Right. Well, and there's also the other side that no one ever talks about is publishers don't need to be so greedy.
How are they greedy? They're only getting like 50% of the revenue, though.
But what I mean by that is that, you know, I look at local journalism as an example here, and understanding that all analogies by definition are bad because it's never accurate comparisons, right? But when local journalism got destroyed in the last decade, it was because all of these publishers were trying to chase national numbers because they were looking at a different reality. So if I live in a town that has 15,000 people in it, my ceiling should be 15,000. But local journalists, like these publishers, weren't looking at it that way because they were looking at these national numbers and thinking, oh, I'm also seeing this traffic and I'm seeing that I'm getting 3 million uniques per month. Well, I'm going to jack up my rates, even though those 3 million are not consequential audiences for me because that's not the community that I'm in. Mm-hmm. So they started chasing those numbers in a pretty poor way. And that started starting to become less of a thing now, you know, as Patch starts to, you know, Patch has been profitable the last couple of years. They've been getting a lot better in this. But the idea, again, is that, and maybe greedy wasn't the right word. They were just looking at a different set of numbers when they should have been focusing on their town, their community. And if you get your local advertiser to run in your paper, on your website, instead of Facebook, what does that do? I don't know. Again, these are all questions that I have no idea the answers to. I am nowhere near smart enough to understand them. But what I do know is that the systems have been changed and we need to be able to adapt to them and just have a little bit more of a sense of reality of like what's in front of our faces.
Right. So the original question of whether digital advertising works or not, I guess we landed at kinda. Or depends.
It depends, right?
It depends.
Like that's the, you know, our favorite phrase in media.
Right.
I don't know. It depends.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Looking ahead, any cool topics we should be on the lookout for in your upcoming newsletters?
Yes. I'm going to be looking at this online journalism, local online journalism.
Ooh.
Desert. I'm working on a piece now, a little bit of a investigative piece on a platform, and just really whatever other kind of brain farts and verbal diarrhea I have to put onto a page.
Well, I look forward to reading that. Everybody should sign up. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next. And I'd like to close by thanking my production team at Up Next, my friend Rob Naughton, the voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, all of you, the members of our audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next time right here on Up Next.